A DOT task force wimps out on a passenger's bill of rights. Boeing is dogged by the threat of another strike. And Iran rattles its saber. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, November 13, 2008. A task force assembled by the U.S. Department of Transportation to deal with the issue of lengthy tarmac strandings has finished its work, but produced only a disjointed set of guidelines with no real teeth. The Associated Press reports the group of federal officials, airline executives, and passengers' rights advocates, which has been meeting for almost a year, couldn't even decide on the definition of lengthy delay. The group did decide airlines should update passengers stuck on the tarmac every 15 minutes about their situation. But the final document calls only for airlines to provide refreshments and entertainment for passengers when practical, and requires that they only make every reasonable effort to keep lavatories working. Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org was obviously disappointed the consensus had nothing defined or enforceable. Quote, "We were hoping at a bare minimum to come out of this task force with a definition of what is an extensive on-ground delay," unquote. Paul Rudin, a senior vice president at the American Society of Travel Agents, noted the panel was dominated by airline interests. Quote, "The airlines don't want it, and the airports believe they already have plans. I had hoped we would do more," unquote. As might be expected, only the airlines, which fought additional regulations, and the DOT, which didn't want the job of enforcement, are happy with it. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters can now finish out her term without revisiting the issue. Quote, "This document and the viewpoints of all the task force members should provide a valuable resource to minimize the hardships to passengers resulting from lengthy airline ground delays," unquote. Air Transport Association spokeswoman Elizabeth Morita commented, quote, "The success of the task force clearly demonstrates that not every problem requires a new law or regulation, especially when it comes to operational and customer service issues," unquote. Even as Boeing struggles to bring its commercial aircraft production back up to speed after a 57-day strike by machinists, it faces another expiring contract with members of the Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace. A few days ago, the word was a settlement was near. Now that appears to have been overly optimistic. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer cites a union source in reporting that, despite a more active role by a federal mediator, the talks between Boeing and SPIA hit a snag Tuesday over incomplete responses from the company to union proposals. The company's statement said all non-economic issues have been resolved, but the union does not appear to agree. There are two SPIA contracts at play, affecting a total of about 21,000 workers. Both of them expire December 1st. While most affected workers are employed in the Puget Sound area, some work in Oregon, Utah, and California. One acknowledged sticking point is Boeing's position that its employees in Utah should not be included in the new contract. Boeing earlier said it would make its best and final offer to the union by Tuesday. That's now slipped to the end of this week, and even that prediction doesn't sound confident. The company was supposed to be starting talks today with 700 engineers based in Wichita, who have a contract which expires December 5th. Those talks have now been pushed off to next week. The government of Iran engaged in a little chest-thumping along the border with Iraq on Tuesday. State media reported Iran test-fired a new short-range missile and conducted exercises using artillery and rocket launchers, a clear warning to the United States against any violation of Iranian airspace. The tests closely follow Iranian threats to shoot down any unauthorized aircraft flying in Iranian airspace. On November 5th, less than 24 hours after Barack Obama was elected president, Iran claimed U.S. helicopters had been seen flying close to its border and warned it would respond accordingly to any breach of that border. The U.S. and Israel are doing their part to keep Iranian leaders on edge, warning that as long as Iran is working on nuclear weapons, airstrikes against Iran cannot be ruled out. Both Bush and Obama have supported that stance, although Obama has also pushed for a diplomatic resolution. Oh yeah? I want to talk to a manager. That's not an exact translation, but seems to be the spirit in which the Russians have told the U.S. they'll wait for Senator Barack Obama to take office as U.S. president before conducting any new talks on a U.S. missile defense system based in Poland. Reuters reports the Kremlin reiterated Wednesday the system would threaten its national security and that the Bush administration has failed to allay its concerns. An unidentified government source told Itar Tass, quote, "Russia is ready to cooperate with the United States on European security, but considers the proposals that were sent are insufficient," unquote. The official was further quoted as offering a motive for U.S. stubbornness on the matter, claiming that Bush, quote, "is intent on putting the new U.S. president in a hopeless situation so that he should take responsibility for what they concocted without him, unquote. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has threatened to deploy missiles and jamming equipment near the Polish border to counter the perceived threat. The U.S. has insisted the missile defense system is designed to counter a threat from Iran and other rogue states, and has offered to allow Russian inspectors into those sites. Up next on ANN, weather on Mars may spell the end of the little rover that could. A cold front on Earth may delay tomorrow's shuttle launch. And analysts say delayed Boeing deliveries are good news for WestJet. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 13th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. A day after reporting Martian weather has probably ended the useful life of the Phoenix Mars lander, NASA reports worsening dust storms are also limiting the solar power budget of the Spirit rover. Spirit and its twin called Opportunity were designed to perform 90-day missions on Mars. They've now been at work nearly 5 years. Spirit's solar array produced only 89 watt-hours of energy on the Martian day, which ended Sunday. That's the lowest output by either rover at any time during their mission, and much less energy than Spirit needs each day. The charge level of Spirit's batteries is dropping so low, it risks triggering an automated safe mode. Mars weather forecasts suggest the dust storm may be clearing within the next few days, but dust falling onto Spirit's solar array could create a long-term power issue. It's not just weather on Mars plaguing NASA this week. The countdown clock is ticking toward tomorrow evening's scheduled launch of the space shuttle Endeavour. But the Associated Press reports a cold front is forecast to bring cloudy skies and rain to Florida's space coast. The launch window for the mission to the International Space Station runs through November 25th, so a Friday launch isn't imperative. But NASA says it would prefer to launch soon enough to ensure that the mission could be completed in time to close down for the Thanksgiving holiday. Mission STS-126 will bring some much-needed home improvements to the space station, including two additional sleeping berths, a new refrigerator, and a kitchenette. The first components of an innovative water filtering and recycling system will also be installed. A draft Pentagon audit report indicates that despite all the noise to the contrary, the U.S. Air Force did act appropriately in changing four key bidding requirements for a contract to produce the service's new combat search and rescue helicopter. Bloomberg reports the audit was requested by the Senate Armed Services Committee earlier this year and finds the Air Force followed protocol in making the changes. The twin-rotor Boeing HH-47 was selected, but protests from competitors Lockheed Martin and Sikorsky put the contract in limbo ever since. The 9-page audit report says changes to the helicopter's cabin space and payload, fuel range, and other mission readiness criteria were properly vetted through the council in accordance with acquisition guidelines, and that some of those changes were, in fact, made at the request of Sikorsky and Lockheed. The Air Force says it hopes to finally award the $15 billion contract next year, but will take the time necessary to make sure every I is dotted so the decision is not protested yet again. The recent 57-day strike at Boeing and the company's delay in getting production back online since it was settled has left some airlines unable to get new planes when originally promised. For some, that may be a good thing. The Vancouver Sun reports that WestJet, the Canadian low-cost carrier, was supposed to get 10 new Boeing 737-700s in 2009. But now, because of the strike, at least three of those planes won't be delivered until the following year. WestJet executives publicly expressed some disappointment, but analysts are calling it good news. WestJet reported a 28% fall-off in third-quarter earnings Monday and has been reducing capacity. If the airline had needed to call Boeing and defer delivery of its new planes, it would have faced penalties. WestJet CFO Vito Culmone said on Monday, quote, "We would have been very happy to take our planes, but I think the investment community is seeing it as a potential relief," unquote. Boeing, on the other hand, was not at risk to offer compensation for late deliveries. Labor actions are lumped in with acts of God in purchase contracts, relieving the manufacturer of any financial penalties for resulting delays. Still ahead, a Garmin executive is confirmed dead in a crash in Arizona. AirTran is the latest airline to charge for all checked bags. And another airport gambles on automated baggage handling. You're listening to AeroNews.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, November 13th. I'm Paul Plack. Officials at Garmin are mourning the loss of Jerry L. Smith in the crash of his personal Cessna 177RG on Tuesday. Smith was aviation regional sales manager for the South Central United States. Details on the crash of the Cardinal are sketchy, but the ID of the plane's lone occupant is positive. The FAA places the site 5 miles from Rich Mountain in Arizona, near Queen Wilhelmina State Park. The company says Smith was on a business trip at the time of the accident and noted his considerable experience in a statement. Quote, "Jerry joined Garmin in 1994 as a regional sales manager and had the distinction of being one of the first aviation sales managers hired by Garmin. He was a commercial pilot with instrument, multi-engine, and instructor ratings with over 20,000 hours. Beyond his professional contributions, even more sorely missed will be his zest for life and sense of humor, which everyone will remember. Our thoughts and prayers are with Jerry's family, friends, co-workers, and customers, as their lives have been changed forever by this tragic event," unquote. AirTran Airways introduced two new policies this week. One is sure to be met with a groan. AirTran was one of the last holdouts against an extra fee for a first checked bag, noting it competes heavily with Delta on routes from Atlanta. AirTran CEO Bob Fornaro told investors last month, quote, "If Delta were to add a first bag fee, we would strongly consider it," unquote. Well, last week, Delta announced a $15 fee on the first checked bag, effective December 5th. Apparently, AirTran was able to strongly consider it rather quickly. The airline yesterday announced its own $15 first bag fee, coincidentally effective December 5th. Frequent flyers and business class customers will be exempt. AirTran also announced that non-premium travelers wishing to upgrade to business class will no longer have to wait until they're at the ticket counter to upgrade. Now, customers can buy the seats when checking in online, at the time of boarding, or even in flight. Business class seats cost $49 to $99 extra, depending on the length of the flight. The upgrade offers wider seats with more legroom, complimentary cocktails and premium snacks, and exempts the passenger from the extra baggage fees. If you're bringing two checked bags, which would normally cost an extra $40 total, business class may pencil out for many. Air New Zealand and Boeing announced on Tuesday that December 3rd will be the date for the airline's sustainable biofuels flight from Auckland, New Zealand, using a 747-400. The test will be conducted in partnership with Rolls-Royce and UOP, a Honeywell company. One of the airplane's four Rolls-Royce RB211 engines will be powered in part using advanced generation biofuels derived from Jatropha. Jatropha is a plant that grows to about 3 meters high and produces seeds that contain inedible lipid oil that's used to produce the fuel. Each seed produces between 30 and 40% of its mass in oil, and Jatropha can be grown in a range of difficult conditions, including arid and otherwise non-arable areas, leaving prime areas available for food crops. If successful, Boeing says Air New Zealand will become the first airline to use a commercially viable biofuel sourced using sustainability best practices. Many existing biofuels have been criticized for producing competition with food crops, and therefore higher food prices worldwide. Boeing Commercial Airplane Managing Director of Environmental Strategy Billy Glover says testing so far has been encouraging, with results which have, quote, exceeded three criteria for the next generation of jet fuel: higher than expected jet fuel yields, very low freeze point, and good energy density. That tells us we're on the right path to certification and commercial availability, unquote. And finally, the billion-dollar reimaging of the Indianapolis International Airport was officially christened on Tuesday. The Indianapolis Star reports the scheduled arrival at the new Colonel H. Weir Cook Terminal by a plane carrying returning soldiers fell through due to logistical issues. A planned flyover by Indiana National Guard F-16s was canceled by rain, which also forced the ribbon-cutting ceremony indoors. But the mood was still upbeat as several hundred onlookers watched Airport Authority Board President Randall Tobias and dozens of local officials, airport execs, and airport vendors cut a 1,000-foot-long red ribbon wrapped around the terminal's massive Civic Plaza Center gathering area. Tobias beamed, quote, "As of now, this is an airport, a real airport," unquote. United Airlines Flight 7622 arrived at the new terminal from Chicago about 8 p.m. Tuesday night. Full operations at the new facility began yesterday, marking the end of an era for the airport's old terminal, which opened in 1957. The new terminal is certainly inspiring with its swooping steel and glass look, five-story window overlooking the city, 1.2 million square feet of space, fine dining, cheap parking, new control tower, and provisions for expansion to as many as 100 gates. And, of course, there's a state-of-the-art $25 million RFID-based automated luggage handling system, which promises to eliminate lost and misrouted baggage. Just like the one in Denver. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear the conclusion of Jim Campbell's interview with incoming AOPA President Craig Fuller. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCast. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.